Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslofsky. Now, you're listening to a man wearing a bright yellow t-shirt with two bunnies teaming up for an awesome joke. My wardrobe is about to grow up, though, and get a little bit more minimalist. This is episode number 61. It's great to have you joining me again today, and I'm grateful for your time and attention. Today is an eagerly anticipated day, well, at least according to comments I've received in the past month, that I'm going to give you part two of my promised Simple Rev 2014 recap from an event organizer's perspective, but also from a storyteller's perspective. If you're wondering, sorry, I had to publish the interview with Mark Sisson from Mark's Daily Apple between these two Simple Rev 2014 related episodes. It was just too dang good to hold back on. But if you haven't listened to part one of my Simple Rev 2014 recap, where I reviewed the workshops, the tomfoolery, and deep personal connections that 55 of us simple living enthusiasts made, you can hear that at valueofsimple.com/SASM059. But before we get into today's stuff, I want to give a shout out to Root Simple, who recently left an iTunes review for this show. Here's what the review said. I found this podcast via the C Realm, heard an episode, and then went on a binge. Joel is a very professional host and great interviewer. I like the way he expanded the notion of simplicity. End of review. Well, thanks for that love, Root Simple, and thanks in advance to anyone who leaves an iTunes review, a comment on the show notes, or just contributes in any way to get my excitement and my ability to keep cranking out the groovy episodes for you. Getting back to Simple Rev, it's been a month and a half since our first ever event ended, and so much has already shifted since then. Dan Hayes, my original co-organizer, and I, we've added two new members to our brain trust, the fabulous Andrea Imsdahl and Sarah Wakecamp, and we're about to start a pilot in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area where I live, with some free local Simple Rev style gatherings, and we have a bunch of other projects that are going to make a big impact on a lot of folks. I'll save the in-depth look forward for another time. Right now, shall we have some story time about what's already happened with the participants of Simple Rev 2014? All right, let your imagination run wild with over-the-top hand gestures, warm hugs, and a whole lot of laughter. Here we go. This probably goes without saying, but I can't possibly discuss every story that I heard from or about a Simple Rev 2014 participant. I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to give you a diverse cross-section that I feel is representative of the huge range of personalities and experiences and emotions of our wonderful Simple Living community. Now, by the way, these are just the stories that I personally know about. I know there are so many other stories out there just waiting to reach the light of day, and I'll work hard to make sure they do. If you have a story, of course, you can always email me, or you can add it to the show notes and a comment on this episode, valueofsimple.com/SASM061, and you'll find more details about some of these stories in blog post recaps that other people wrote in this episode's show notes. Let's start with some attendee story time stories from the event. Attendee story time was a 30-minute segment that we carved out at the start of day two for any participant to come up front in front of their community and tell a Simple Living story for 2 to 3 minutes. Some people talked about their origin story down the path towards simplicity. Other people talked about challenges, struggles, past, present, and what they perceive to be a future. But boy, howdy, did we have some doozies in the best possible way. I have actually a lot of good audio from attendee story time, so I'm actually going to play what our participants told us for some of these stories so you can hear it in their own words and with their own emotions. But first, we have Anthony, who told us about his problem with Amazon Prime and instant gratification. He went on to tell us how that mindset, how that consumption mindset was reducing his creativity and increasing his impulsiveness, yet he was able to face the cold, hard data and facts about his spending choices. And actually, he was able to give up his Amazon Prime habit for months. Going to the other side of his issue, he became okay with wanting things. He became okay with just sitting with an urge, you know, even playing around with it a little bit, acknowledging that it was legitimate, but not acting on it. Let's hear Anthony's story from the man himself.
Good morning. So my story was a couple years ago, and it was kind of an odd thing that kicked it off. But I think one of the most notable points that I realized in this simplicity journey, I've always been into certain elements of meditation, observing Buddhism, but not actually necessarily practicing it. But what happened for me was I pulled 4 years of history on my Amazon Prime account and printed it out and basically assessed the results of that. And through Amazon Prime, I had been, in essence, immediately fulfilling any desire that I wanted for quite a while, 4 years at least. So I looked at it, and the chart was very much a long tail. So it wasn't, basically I spent probably $11,000 on Amazon.com in 4 years. So if you get a lot of your household needs, things like that through it, I think it's reasonable. But this was not that. There was a laptop at the high end, and a couple, you know, $5 items at the other. But the bulk of the chart was $20 things. So it was a process of me just going, oh, it's just $20, get it. Oh, it's just $25, get it. Anything under that, I would just get. And I realized that I was inhibiting creativity, the drive for desire, just by immediately fulfilling those needs. So I just totally, for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, just totally quit Amazon Prime. That was like a big step. Which sounds ridiculous. But that was like kind of the start of my journey in terms of being okay with wanting things. Being okay with just sitting there, because I think it drives a lot of creativity and just it allows you to fulfill those needs in other ways, and it really puts you to work instead of, like, it's okay to want things and not fulfill it, you know, immediately. It makes you appreciate them more and that kind of thing. So, yeah, that was mine.
We're off to a good start. Would you say? Anthony, I just got to say, I know you listen to the show. Thanks for being so transparent, vulnerable, and accountable. I'm thinking that there's a lot of people who just listen to your story that can relate. Now let's shift to Jean-Francois of Revivers.ca. To get the full effect from this one, you really need to watch the video. And the good news is that our Simple Rev team is working on publishing some of our attendee story time stories to our YouTube channel. This one will be included when it's ready. But for now, you can just imagine Jean-Francois as best as you possibly can, somebody who has managed but has certainly not been defined by cerebral palsy his entire life. Let's hear from Jean-Francois.
First, I'd like you to close your eyes. Think about when you were a kid in elementary school. Think about it's fall, it's cold, it's getting colder. You're expecting the snow soon. And then you wake up one morning, and then your mom comes in your room and says, you know what? And then you bolt out of bed. You run to the window, and then you see the first fresh snow of the year. And then you're like so excited. Can you feel yourself being so excited and say, man, I'm going to go play in the snow today at school. And I was excited, like you. It lasted about a minute. And then my joy, my smile, turned into sadness. And I started crying. And then that's where my journey to minimalism or simple life began. If you want, you can open your eyes. Then I would cry. Why? Because I would be like, who's going to put my boots on at school for recess? Who's going to help me put my suit on? And it was really nerve-wracking. So then my mom and myself would think of ways to simplify my life, try to make myself an easier way to put my boots on, to do stuff like that. And by now, I'm 33, so you think I'm an expert at it? No, I still have so much to learn. And as we learn, me and Cheryl, we really want to help people. And I want to inspire people to simplify their life stuff, but also their body, their mind, and just being less worried. You know, give them some kind of hope that they can change their life for the best. And that's what we want to do. And that's why we started Revivers.ca.
There's definitely more to Jean-Francois' story, but we're going to save the full clip for our YouTube channel. It's just, it's so awesome to see the impact that Jean-Francois and his wife Cheryl are having on their local community, but not just their local community, on the greater Simple Living community through their website, Revivers.ca. I've been watching their YouTube videos, and I'm a big fan of theirs now. I'll have a link in the show notes so you can check this couple out more. For a completely different type of story from a different perspective, let's hear what Michelle of Enoughist.com had to tell us during story time.
But my name is Michelle Russell. I live in San Francisco, and I don't really have any kind of a dramatic inciting incident about how I got started in simplicity and minimalism. I've always just kind of been like that. What I'm excited about and what I want to kind of share a little bit is where I'm going with it. I'm here as kind of a mix of business and personal interest. I'm on the verge of starting let's back up a little. I am in my mid to late 40s. And on the one hand, I am really, really passionately committed toward living a life that is meaningful to me. And on the other hand, I'm trying to pay the bills, and I'm watching myself slowly become a walking statistic. I'm like unhealthy, overweight, miserable in my job, not happy in my living situation. All the things, you know, I own too much stuff, despite the fact that I'm a minimalist, and I'm watching myself go down this path and going, I know better than this. And I'm starting to, a brief story, I'm a recovering perfectionist, and I'm getting over the whole all or nothing mentality, and I'm learning that little steps really count. And the blog that I'm going to start, that I'm in the process of starting, I'm in the pre-launch phase, is called Enoughist.com. I've started calling myself an enoughist because people react funny to the term minimalism. They think, oh my God, you know, doing without, poverty, scarcity. But strangely enough, they react very well to the term enoughist. So I'm going to try to popularize that, and I would love as much help from you guys as possible. And basically what I want to do is two things. It's going to be a mission-driven blog where I want to share the message as I'm personally going through the journey of figuring all this crap out for myself. I want to help other people do the same thing, and I want to build community around this to share the message, which essentially is simplicity and minimalism. I'm just going to call it by a slightly different name. And at the same time, I would like to use it as a way to leverage myself out of, like, what I call the corpocracy, so I can start. What I really am interested in is not making a mint you know, and like earning all this money. I'm interested in buying back my time so that I can have all 24 hours of my day back to contribute toward doing something that I think is meaningful in the world. And if I can parlay this blog into that, then that would be great. If not, I have other things I can do, but I'm like really, really excited about getting this blog started. And I have some offers and needs related to that up to there, set up on the board in the other room. So I would invite anybody and everybody here to jump in any way on that, that they could help me out. And I just, it's so great to be here.
You know what stuck with me about Michelle's story? This all too common problem of trying to pay the bills. I mean, yeah, trying to pay the bills, but hearing her describe herself as a walking statistic, something that she desperately wanted to change, and I know she's on her way to doing it. And maybe for you too, did her words about being a recovering perfectionist, you know, somebody struggling with this all or nothing mentality, did they resonate with you like it did with me? I still have challenges when it comes to perfection, even with this show itself, how much editing I do, how much work I put into it, how much I craft the type of words that I'm using and the tone and the inflection. Michelle's just totally right, though. I mean, those little steps away from perfectionism, away from an all or nothing mentality, they really count. And especially they count when you're working towards buying back your time to practice work and a life of meaning. Next up, we have Connor, a woman I enjoy more and more with every interaction that we have and every tidbit I get to understand about her background. You ready for Connor? Here she comes.
My name is Connor Truman, and I've been on an intentional simplicity journey for about 2 years, and I have a very specific incident. I know some people have mentioned specific incidents that have taken them on this journey, and it's when I went to a friend's wedding in Ohio 2 years ago. I flew from Winnipeg to Toronto, Toronto, Columbus, Ohio, and my bag got lost in Toronto somewhere. So I go through customs. I know I don't have this bag. I know I'm not going to have it with me when I go to the wedding. I'm singing at the wedding, so I had a dress in there for the rehearsal dinner. I had a dress that I knew I could wear in front of a group of people. And I'm sitting there waiting for my flight thinking, oh my gosh, there's probably $1,000 worth of stuff in that bag. Why did I even check a bag? I'm only going for 4 days, right? So I sat there and had this sort of, internal freak out. I don't think people around me knew that was happening. And I got home from that trip, and I said, I'm never checking a piece of luggage again. That was ridiculous. It was me. It was one person. And so then I started investigating how I could best do that, and that sort of spiraled into or snowballed into other things, and now it's sort of spread throughout our entire lives. And I say ours because my husband's a like moderately willing participant in these adventures. He doesn't stop me, but he usually lets me charge ahead for about a year on a project before he jumps on board. So that was a specific incident for me that started my journey. So
awesome.
That's pretty cool stuff, Connor. Thanks to you as well for sharing your story with us at the event and now with you, the listener, through this podcast. There were more stories during story time. I don't have the time or the permission to share them all, but it was just a wonderful collective of people just really getting deep, getting raw, transparent, and authentic with each other. It was a thing of beauty. And speaking of things of beauties, our workshops, we had some, it wasn't planned, it just worked out this way. We had some wonderful stories, informal stories that were shared during those workshops. Some of them I'll paraphrase, and some of them I actually have the audio to play, so I figured, hey, might as well play it for you. You know what I'm saying? But regardless, they are all wonderful in their own way. I'm going to start with Dave and Cheryl Balthrop's workshop because they had the highest concentration of publishable stories. And these are the same duo that run SimpleLifeReboot.com. And if their website becomes as amazing as their workshop was, oh boy, look out world for Dave and Cheryl. I think it's appropriate to start with the two of them themselves. We at Civil Rev 2014 heard them talk about the challenges and the very real social stigma associated with intentionally downsizing. For them, it was their house. But for other people, it was their relationships, which was absolutely true of me, it still is, their electronics. For other people, it's their commitments, and there's a whole lot more. But hearing these two talk about it, you know, I can vividly recall Cheryl giving us the context that now she's a managing partner at a law firm and the chairman of the local chamber of commerce. Not exactly somebody who you might think of as an ideal simple living enthusiast, but she totally is, and so genuine in it too. One of her primary concerns at the start of it was, how's it going to reflect on my partners, her law partners that is, when one of their own sells all of their stuff? You know, they edited 85% of their possessions in their first year after embarking on their minimalist simple living journey. And the backdrop to Cheryl's statement is that, you know, no matter what Dave and Cheryl accomplished or purchased, they just felt that there was this gaping hole in their lives. And they started to notice it, and they really enjoyed spending time together, but they weren't spending time together. They were out in their town. They were trying to be all-stars. They were filling up their calendars. And the people that actually mattered most to them were the people that they were seeing the least. Cheryl really explained it well when she said, and I'm going to quote her for a second here. She said, I wanted to signal to people. I wanted to open the door to my house and say, ta-da! But what are people going to think when we sell the house and move in with my mom? Yeah, Dave and Cheryl moved in with Cheryl's mom while they sold their house and downsized significantly. And to hear Dave tell the side of the story, the social hit he took, it was big and deep. I remember him saying that, you know, moving into your mother-in-law's house, it's not exactly the most manly thing to do. But they knew, and he knew, that they were doing it for the right reasons. I mean, they knew the temptation of storage. And Cheryl was recalling that, and she's seen this herself. I've heard of it too. Once you get one storage locker, then you get two. Then you get three, and you keep putting more and more in there. So these two, they just decided that they couldn't do that. And they told each other, you know, this, their mother-in-law's house and the room that they had within the house, this is our new space. End of story, period. If our stuff gets to be too much, then something needs to get donated or removed. Now, I don't know what you're thinking at this point, but what would you say if Cheryl asked you, like she asked us at Simple Rev 2014, how many, or do you feel like you need to have furniture for the patio when you don't even go on the patio? Think about what that statement is. Do you feel the need to have something just because there's a social expectation, just because it's what everyone else around you is doing, and you don't even use it? You don't even look at it. You don't even touch it, see it, smell it, appreciate it. I really know exactly what she's talking about when she owned up to saying that she was just safe. They had this little castle, their old house, and they expected people to come to them and pay homage to their little castle. Cheryl wrapped up their two-year journey really nice at the end of the workshop when she mentioned that now, getting really deep into their simple living journey, they are just so darn excited about life. You know, to listen to the last 6 minutes of their workshop, which we'll make available for people who subscribe to the Simple Rev newsletter, they're just so dang excited. And all of the benefits that they've received socially now, you know, they've recovered their social capital and then some. The travel that they've been able to do, the connection that they've been able to have with their children now, what they're going through, to hear them talk about it, it's not a midlife crisis. It's more like a rebirth, an opportunity to, as they said, finally be growing up into the people they were meant to be. This was such a great workshop. And I want to tell you about some other stories that Cheryl and Dave drew out of participants in the audience during their workshop. Now, first up, we have Ethan Waldman of thetinyhouse.net. And he spoke about how people thought he was just going through a phase when he built his tiny house. It was just some callous thing. Ooh, I'm going to build a tiny house, and ooh, it's a fun experiment. And the implication here is that, as Ethan was telling us, why are you, Ethan, why aren't you taking that 30 grand that you're going to use to build your tiny house and put a down payment on a real house? Like, a tiny house isn't actually a real house. People were wondering, how is this going to support you for the rest of your life? And what those people don't understand is the underlying motivation behind building a tiny house. All the freedom, the self-sufficiency, the contentment. Just, for example, which Ethan covers in his guide, Tiny House Decisions. And a quick side note, I reviewed Ethan's Tiny House Decisions guide on Value of Simple, and I got to tell you, I think it's pretty super sweet. You can check that out for yourself at valueofsimple.com/THD. Next, we heard from Vanessa Hayes of simplelifetogether.com as she spoke about being accused of not being sentimental enough. This is something that I get all the time. She talked about this sense of guilt that others make her feel for being able to let go of things that most other people couldn't or wouldn't. And I was almost, I mean, Dan Hayes was sitting in between Vanessa and I, and I just wanted to reach over and pat her on the shoulder and be like, Vanessa, I totally get it, because I'm the same way. And I have this sneaking suspicion that people think that I'm some kind of unsentimental buzzkill who doesn't appreciate the history or the meaning of, say, a family heirloom, or that thing, you know, that thing that's been sitting in a box in a basement for years and is never going to see the light of day. That really spoke to me. And by the way, if you like to increase your ability to detach yourself from certain objects, it's something that can be cultivated, and you don't need to be a professional organizer like Vanessa or some kind of natural minimalist, at least as far as physical possessions go, like I am. I'll put links in the show notes to some helpful articles like Courtney Carver's on all the sentimental stuff and clutter. And there's a really good article on unclutterer.com called Determining If a Sentimental Item is Clutter or Treasure. Head on over to the show notes to check those out. Next, we had Kyle Ashley of ashleyconsulting.com talk about, you know what? Let's just hear from Kyle himself on this one.
I think for us, it's been about like trying to be sensitive about how people are choosing to live. That's different from the way that we want to live, right? Mm-hmm. So when we tell people about our dream of living simply, having a tiny house, traveling a lot, I think a lot of times people take that personally, mm-hmm. and they take it as a criticism to mm-hmm. the way that they're living their lives. And then what we'll hear in response to that is, well, so many people live this way, and there's got to be a reason why people do this. Yeah. So maybe you should think about
Did you catch that? Did you catch the feeling behind Kyle's words? You know, he was saying, hey, you should get and do what everyone else is doing. If everybody's doing it, there's gotta be a reason for that. Like, if it's mainstream, then it's approved. It's the thing to do. But a lot of people who practice simple living, they're comfortable leading a countercultural lifestyle of thinking, being, doing, and acting in ways that are outside of what's approved and outside of the mainstream. Kyle embodies that, and I'm really encouraged by people like him and the direction that he's heading in. And as we continue to go around the room, Connor, who we previously heard from, who was part of the formal attendee story time, she told another story about how countercultural it is to own one car in her community. But at least to her and her husband, that's just the way that they live. She can bike to work. It took her 10 minutes, and they've had one car for 8 years. And hey, guess what, folks? They are doing just fine, thanks. But yet, people misunderstand. You know, they leave conversations with her confused, like, why would you only have one car? How could you possibly get by with just one car and two adults? And the funny thing, this is what I think about. I don't know if you think the same way. But what a lot of people forget is that billions of people across the world get along just fine with no cars. Like billions of people, they're doing just fine with no cars at all. I also want you to hear from Andrea and this rattling story she told us. I'm going to cut her in right now.
So back to stigma. Any other experiences that people had?
Mine is actually more with myself. When my husband and I first met, and my car literally died with 203,000 miles, and I couldn't afford to buy a new one. And so we were a one-car family for over 7 years, and people thought it was crazy. Well, when we met, I owned a house, he owned a house, he had a rental property, so between two people, we had three houses. And I gave up my car and moved in with him, so I got rid of a lot of my stuff. My only thing was my first adult piece of furniture was my beautiful dining room table, and I'm like, okay, this is the terms of us moving in together. The dining room table is part of the deal. But I literally had to get rid of everything else, and I still had my house, and I convinced a friend to move into my house, and I was like, I need my house. Like, I am a successful professional. I have no car. I literally have no possessions. All I had was my house. And thankfully, I got hit by a tornado. And I'm not kidding.
Why did I think of that?
Made the decision very easily that this is stupid and God is sending a message that it's time to let go of the house. So after 4 years of living with my husband, I had to get rid of my house. And it was more for me because it was like the conversation went, but I make X amount of dollars. How can I have nothing? Because I felt like there was nothing to me. There was no, I didn't have a car, I didn't have this, I didn't have that. But now it's like we've made the decision. We love our house. It's tiny, and we had to add a second bathroom because we have a 13-year-old now. And so, but we decided to stay there. And as a result, we're much happier. We went to Brazil for three weeks and got to have the experiences and show our son that you don't need all this crap. You just need the experiences, and even for gifts and stuff for him. And the last few years, it's been about experiences and taking him to cool restaurants and to cool places to help him become a world citizen.
And that time, too.
The time, and we sit and have dinner together every night at my beautiful dining room. That's really why I wanted to keep it.
Wow. Wow, Andrea. I've never heard somebody say that they're grateful that their house got hit by a tornado. Try taking that one out of context. I just have three more stories that I want to share from this workshop. The next one is from Liz. And Liz was talking about her design/branding team and how they gave up their fancy loft office because, hey, everybody preferred working from home. I prefer working from home, and everybody on their team was scattered here, there, and everywhere on a daily basis, and they never actually spent time in their fancy loft office. But it was really hard for her to part with that office because a lot of her work identity, a lot of her business's identity was wrapped up in the fancy office itself and how trendy it was and the vibe that you got when you walked in there. I know a lot of people, this is very common, and I felt it too. I know a lot of people who have their identity wrapped up in things like a job title, their wardrobe, the brand of their car, or these other typical external projections of success, status, power. And that's really was a major theme of Dave and Cheryl's workshop. Steve Taubman was next from stevetaubman.com. He took the opportunity to rail against the consumer label, something that at least I know I've done. I really, really don't like it when somebody describes the American consumer or my role to the economy as a consumer. Like, that's a primary identity that I have. And this consumer-centric machine, and it's even trying to commandeer a lot of what I see as our simple living movement by analyzing us and assessing and thinking, there's got to be something good to sell these people who are into simple living. Minimalists, they're suckers for this. Let's try to sell them that. Here's more of Steve's thoughts on the topic of consumerism.
I marvel at the fact that I've actually done closet cleanings, maybe on a semi-annual basis for you know, for years, and there's still in there. It blows my mind that there's this never-ending, like, there's still clothes that I don't wear. That, you know, but I maybe next year I'll have the courage to get rid of that one or that one or that one. And ultimately, like, I just want to dress like Hank Moody, you know, from Californication, just a pair of jeans and a black t-shirt, and I'm good, and that's fine. Yeah. But what's intriguing about the process of giving this stuff away, whether it's a train set or clothes or whatever it is that it broadens your definition of who you are in the world. Yep. You know, like, see, at first our identity is I'm me, right? And so my stuff is my stuff. And so I'm the one who's meant to benefit from this stuff. And what I've noticed in getting in the habit of giving things away is that I get joy out of knowing that somebody else is getting benefit from this thing. There's a lot of, like, probably really well-dressed homeless people around Burlington, Vermont. Because, like, you know, I'm just giving away, like, you know, Brioni suits of the Salvation Army. It's like, it's insane. But I got it. I'm not using it. You're using it. I get pleasure out of knowing that you're using it because you are me.
And you do have great suits, and I've been enjoying them.
All I got to say about that one, right on, Steve. Right on, man. This last brief story that I want to share from you, at least from this workshop, it comes from Kim. And Kim told us about how she has plenty of empty areas in her living space, and she's happy with it that way, but she feels this sense of hurt when she still wants stuff all the time. And she loves her clean, open spaces and simplifying, but this want, you know, the desire, the impulse to have more is still there for her. And we heard Anthony talk about it in his attendee story time conversation earlier. And you know what, Kim, if you're listening, I've been there. A lot of other folks who are listening right now, they've been there too. In fact, I'm still there from time to time. I haven't tamed my wild desires and all of my wants. They still pop up in my brain more frequently than I'd like. And I don't think I'll ever reduce my wants to some insignificant or arbitrary threshold. But like Anthony explained to us, it really does get better with time. And reducing your urges and not acting on them all the time, yeah, of course, that's important, but sometimes owning those impulses and admitting them publicly, out loud, it's just as important. Now, as far as the other workshops go, there were plenty of other stories from them, but a couple of our workshop leaders themselves shared some really good stories that I want to share with you. Joshua Becker of BecomingMinimalist.com led a workshop on blogging and how to spread your influence through the written word. And about two-thirds of the way in, Joshua told us the story about he started blogging on Becoming Minimalist in May 2008, and he quit in January 2009. He didn't write for 2 months until he just decided, hey, I'm going to write a blog post about donating prom dresses. He read something about it. And on that blog post, he got one comment. And that comment said, Joshua, where have you been? Please come back. And that was all it took. You know, he didn't think anybody was reading. He didn't think anybody cared. But clearly, he was making an impact, even if it was just on a single person. And that was good enough for him to continue. And that the theme of his workshop, he had three things. One of them was write, write, write. Or in my case, podcast, podcast, podcast. Maybe for you, it's do art, do art, do art. Or whatever it is that you use your creativity for. The next part was connect, connect, connect. Be a human. You know, connect with other humans. Connect with nature. Connect with your environment. And then the third part was persevere, persevere, persevere. Now, so many of us, we have talent and all this potential. We start on something and then we just give up. Because it doesn't feel like we're getting traction. It doesn't feel like anyone's paying attention. But listening to Joshua will tell that story about how he gave up. And who knows, maybe the world would have never benefited like I have. And 1.5 million other people who visit Becoming Minimalist every month now. If Joshua, back in January 2009, if he just decided, hey, you know what? This isn't going anywhere. I'm done. I'm calling it. Another powerful story from a workshop leader was David Delp. And David was telling the story, his workshop, the theme was failure, and it's okay to fail. In fact, we should be celebrating failure. I really like his simple system for everything. These are the kinds of things that I talked about back in the previous episode, episode 59, where I recap the workshops themselves. But David was telling the story of a bunch of his personal failures in rapid succession. He was this fancy pants creative director for Microsoft TV. He had a big staff under him and a lot of importance within the organization. But hearing him tell it, you know, he hadn't done anything that he felt was creative in years. He felt stifled. And at home, his marriage is falling apart. He felt thwarted in his role as a good father. And there was a time in the workshop where he said, I was barely alive at that point in time. But the best thing that happened to him was he got laid off. He was so excited about getting laid off. And the only obligations he had at that point were his four-year-old's preschool schedule and an extra place to rent. He also told us a story about his father. And his whole theme, if you've ever seen pilotfire.com, which is a great website. I spend some time on there too. David makes people gets people to wear the goggles and talk about before I die, I want to, and then you insert what it is there. Last year, actually, I wore David's Pilot Fire goggles at the World Domination Summit, and I said, before I die, I want to publish my book on experience curating. Well, guess what? 6 months later, I did it, and David was cheering me on. Before David dies, he wanted to forgive his father. And he loves his father, but he's been really sloppy with their relationship for a number of years. And then David was telling the story about how they took a trip to Mexico together. And it wasn't all sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows after that, but rekindling some of that father-son relationship as one of the roles was just a really cool story. I'd like to leave you with one more story. This one coming from a blog post, one of our Simple Rev 2014 participants, Rebecca, wrote about her experience. She and her husband, Brian, stumbled across Simple Rev via a tweet from The Minimalists. Now, Brian initially thought that our event would do something like teach people how to organize their stuff, and he envisioned a room full of plastic bins and label makers. But as Rebecca and Brian quickly discovered, we, the Simple Rev gang, were not about helping people reorganize their junk. That's not our thing. She wrote that we're about getting rid of junk, you know, physical, relational, mental, emotional, that kind of junk, in order to focus on a more intentional life and a life with more room for faith, experiences, mindfulness, gratitude, that kind of stuff, the good stuff. And I even remember offering up to Rebecca and Brian a hug the very first time I met them at the very start of day one and seeing the awkwardness that I created by wanting to give them a hug like I was giving everyone else a hug that was there. And I know they didn't strike me as a touchy-feely kind of crew, but, you know, hey, I like to hug people. And I love to grow my presence on Hugger. I'm getting pretty big on that social platform, Hugger, you know. But standing next to them at lunch on day two, you know, talking about composting and limiting our ecological footprint, I felt this warmth coming from them. And really, that's what happens when you share stories, your story, but other people's stories with others, you know, even strangers. I've shared so many stories with you today, and you cut past all the bull pretty darn quick if you can do it in a genuine way. And everybody has the ability to share stories in an authentic, candid way. You need to have the spirit, the courage to do it. And to hear Rebecca tell it, you know, talking about simplicity, it just means very little without the personal testimony behind it, which I totally agree with. But to add on to that, engaging in simplicity, living the simple life, means very little without a community behind you and a community to belong to. Well, I'm all out of stories for you right now, but two Simple Rev participants, Chris and Sarah Wakamp of ParentsWho.com, are working hard on their own version of stories. I'm going to feature this fantastic couple on the next episode of Smart and Simple Matters, but you do not have to wait until then to literally hear what they've been up to. Today, November 17th, 2014. Chris and Sarah launched Imagining Aloud, a subscription service of high quality, all original, entertaining audio stories for children and families, containing a whole heck of a lot of warmth, humor, human values that are pretty darn universal, and some really memorable characters delivered every single week. I've been fortunate enough to help them beta test the content, and it is great. I can almost hear their stories, like Gregory Goat, which is a pretty chill story, or The Clumsy Fox, which is a very vibrant story and entertaining one in my head right now. And Chris just, he has this amazing knack for storytelling and script writing, voice acting, and audio production. Man, I gotta get some information from that dude when it comes to audio production. Wow. Even my four-year-old son, Grant, he told me when we were listening to one of the stories, he said, "That's silly, Papa." I gotta tell you, coming from that dude, that is high praise. Now, I'm not going to get compensated if you go to parentswho.com right now and subscribe to Imagining Aloud. I just truly believe in Chris and Sarah. I really dig their mission and the quality of what they create. And really, they created this product because, just like me, they want families to have screen-free, guilt-free ways to engage their children's imagination while also enjoying some quality family time in the process. I know they're also jazzed about families having advertising-free, very lightly branded and age-appropriate stories for their kids to listen to. I wholeheartedly support that. I know of nothing else like this. So if you're a mama or papa that comes home from work and you're just pooped, I mean, you're pooped, but you still want to enrich the quality time that you do have with your kids, check out Imagining Aloud. Maybe you're a grandma or grandpa who will want to increase your grandkids' imagination without some kind of big time investment or energy investment. If that's you, you got to peep this. And if you're an educator or a homeschooler who wants an attractive alternative to those glowing screens that just constantly vie for our attention, something that can actually compete with those glowing screens for kids' attention, then Imagining Aloud could be just what you're looking for. I should take that back. It should be just what you're listening for. There's going to be a link to Imagining Aloud in the show notes, which you can get at valueofsimple.com/SASM061. And I know that Chris and Sarah are giving a limited time discount to their first 100 subscribers, which could mean a bargain for you if you're quick. I really believe in the power of story, and I'm believing in it more every day, and I plan to incorporate it more and more into this podcast and everything else I'm involved in. So I hope you got something from Anthony's story of instant gratification and the dangers of one-click shopping on Amazon Prime. I hope you got something out of Jean-Francois' story of his physical challenge and the inspiration that he's given others in overcoming many of his struggles. I hope that you're going to support Michelle Russell when Enoughist.com goes live, or maybe you'll decide to travel lightly based on Connor's story of loss while she was flying to a wedding. I really want you to challenge yourself and to challenge others to push back against the social stigma that's associated with intentional downsizing by supporting the spirit of Dave and Cheryl Balthrop. Can you challenge people when they imply that a tiny house isn't a real house, or challenge people when they question how a family can get by using only one car? Really, just fight your expectations about what a professional should own or how much they should let social norms enforce what they consume. You heard what Andrea had to say about it, and man, what a powerful story. And I really want you to firmly, very firmly reject the consumer label, because you and I, we are so much more than consumers. Don't quit on your creativity, folks. I mean, whether that's through art, blogging, podcasting, or whatever medium floats your boat, you heard Joshua Becker. He almost quit. He almost gave up on becoming minimalist. And I don't know about you, but I sure as heck am glad that he didn't. And just last, let David Delp's question rattle around your brain a bit. You know, what do you want to do before you die? If you want more Simple Rev podcast stuff, Dan and I released another joint Simple Rev 2014 episode on our All Things Simple Rev podcast over at simplerev.com. You can find the show notes for that other episode at simplerev.com/012. And if you're thinking, Joel, dude, how come I never knew that you and Dan did a Simple Rev specific podcast together? Well, head on over to simplerev.com/iTunes and subscribe to All Things Simple Rev so you don't miss a beat going forward. That's a wrap for this episode of Smart and Simple Matters. Keep listening, keep contributing, and keep simplifying. I can already see and feel this shift that's happening towards simplicity and community building in pockets of the world, and we need your help to hasten that shift towards living intentionally, feeling gratitude, embracing an abundance mindset, and all the other wonderful things the simple life brings. You, yes, you rock my socks both on and off, which is tricky to do. And hey, what do you say? Should we just keep inspiring each other back and forth? Yeah, sounds like a good time to me. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.